This is an intro. Intro, intro, intro.
Hustle and Float Chart with your boy,
my boy,
Matt Wolf and Joe Fit.
Hey!
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Hustle and Float Chart podcast.
Who's everyone?
Everyone. Mark, Tina, Steve, Jeff.
Oh, they're all listening, but not at the same time.
No, no, not necessarily at the same time. My name is Matt Wolf. I'm here with Joe. Not Joe Rogan, no. Joe Fear.
Yeah. Yeah. Birth certificates definitely says Joseph, but Joe Fear.
Yeah, but it definitely does not say Joe Rogan.
No. We ain't got that going on.
All right.
But maybe we'll interview him soon.
That's the plan.
We will, actually.
That's on our radar. Or be interviewed by him, I guess.
Either way, it's cool with me, man. So, how you been doing?
I've been doing great since the last time we recorded an intro an hour ago.
Dude, that was like trying to cover up the fact that, like, you know, this whole, I guess we make it obvious we batch these things, huh?
Yeah, I don't think it's a secret anymore.
Okay, fine.
What are we talking about today, not Joe Rogan?
What are we talking about? Well, you know, you had the same conversation I did. Jesus, you're acting like you weren't there.
This is coming before the conversation.
That's true. Little inside note.
Yeah.
Record these after. Surprise, surprise.
No, this was a pretty wide-ranging conversation.
I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah.
And it went deep, like immediately.
Mm-hmm. Immediately, like right off the bat. We talked about
totally
psychedelics. We talked about therapy. We talked about
emotions and tapping into your empathetic side, especially us men.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us need that little like jolt of that.
Yeah.
You got some in, you know, you got emotions in you.
Yeah. Let them out.
Let them go. And then your business can improve.
Yeah.
In your life and all these things that you think like you're grasping on so strong to.
Yeah.
Making the money. Gotta get whatever. Like, eh.
Yeah.
Stop white knuckling. So we're talking to Justin Goff today. Yes. And this guy is super cool.
And he's got one of the most interesting approaches to email marketing that I've seen. You actually have to apply to be on his email list.
Justin123.com.
Yeah, if you go to Justin123.com, you can apply to be on his email list. But, you know, he's only keeping a very small, high-level email list and just sharing his cool thoughts from the day. And the way he sort of promoted his email list and created this email list, I was blown away. And we talk about it. He kind of covers it and why he did it that way and how it sort of evolved. But I was pretty much blown away by that sort of process and
I love it.
The sort of social proof of just getting on an email list that you have to apply to be on. And, you know, and I have to imagine his email list is just responsive as shit.
Yeah. I just love the perspective. And we were talking about this prior to recording here is the fact that Justin has sold a business that he took to $23 million in sales.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into that story in the podcast. So he, you know, he went through a lot of mental work, inner work and all that. And we'll dig into that. That's kind of how we start this thing. So no need to even, you know, say that anymore. But the fact that he has an email list that he wants to give his marketing thoughts out to, mm-hmm. and it's a small group. He said it's like 900 something people.
Yeah.
And, you know, Justin's, if you think about a perspective of someone that sold a business and doesn't really need the money and took time off to really figure out like what's important in life and business and people and him and all that, like that's an email list I want to be on.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be on many email lists. So like the fact that there is an application is even better. It's so cool. But you know, the value in those emails are going to be way better than some person trying to just hawk something every day.
Yeah.
And just push, you know?
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about his email. We're going to talk about the sort of emotional elements of running a business and writing copy. And we also do dive deep on some copy elements and how to work these sort of emotional angles and these emotional triggers into writing your copy. And I think that was one of the areas where I got some of the biggest ahas from this conversation is, you know, the different niches and what sort of emotions you need to touch on based on the niche that you're talking to. I thought that was just pure gold when he started getting into that stuff.
Yeah, because it's yeah. I most copywriters and folks like us, you know, he even said like, oh yeah, and he didn't say us, we are, but like C, B level marketers, you know, or copywriters specifically. There's a reason why he said that, and we'll get into it. But he really lays out how he triggers these certain emotions in people that they might not know is in them or they're not publicly saying.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives us a process of how to just do that. And you can apply that once you actually know who your audience is and how to be compliant too, to get cold traffic, because he's a cold traffic ninja, which, you know, the reason like we do a lot more of the warm traffic stuff. After you listen to a show, you get retargeted. So he's like, he's getting the conversions rocking from touch one from a Google or Facebook ad. Really cool.
For sure. And I mean, this episode is just filled with gold nuggets. And we did take notes on this one. Like we take notes on all of our episodes.
We always do that, right?
We do that. Yeah. Okay, in fact, if you go to hustleandflowchart.com/comp, C-O-M-P, that's the easy link to remember to go get the notes for this one. But you do have to be quick because the notes do get overwritten by future episodes and things like that. So make sure you go and grab those notes pretty quickly after this episode comes out, and we'll hook you up for free. Mm-hmm. If you wait on them, they won't be free. You got to be an Epic member to get them beyond that little free window. And Epic stands for Evergreen Profits Insider Club.
That's right.
That's so our new rebranding.
We want to be epic with you.
Yes.
Thank you, Brad Costanzo, for the motivation, or not the motivation, the
idea.
I can't even think. Yeah, I guess idea. I was thinking of another word, acronym? But yes, idea of the acronym.
Yeah, Brad gave us that acronym. It's Thank you, Brad.
Epic acronym. I mean,
Brad's no Joe Rogan, but we do appreciate the
He has acronym. A podcast, though, and it's really good, too.
Yeah, so it's no Joe Rogan, though. What's his podcast?
Well, it's not Joe Rogan.
It's not Joe Rogan.
You Google and figure that out.
Yeah.
He's had enough shout outs on this show, I think. So hustleandflowchart.com/comp, C-O-M-P. Get them free notes. Be quick. And, you know, they do go away in a vault.
Yep.
So
the Epic Vault.
You got to, in the Epic Vault, there is a way to join and be an Epic member. And guess what? It's like dirt cheap.
Yeah.
So,
Don't be T-Rexing us. Go be Epic.
Go be Epic and reach some pockets. It's cool. It's worth it. I guarantee it. And if you don't think it's worth it, then please let us know. Not much more to that, but
yeah, I mean, you can let us know. We probably won't respond, but
no, I mean, you're going to get a response. Maybe, maybe not. We'll read it.
Yes.
Someone will read it.
Someone will read it.
Called the bucket that we're like, nope, not for us.
Yeah.
Not us, bucket. Oh, man.
But we'll hear about it.
Well, yes. So don't worry. Your voices will be heard. Just might not be responded to.
Yep. Yep. So hustleandflowchart.com/comp, C-O-M-P.
Be epic. And this chair is very squeaky. That chair? The other one broken. Yeah, that's because
you're freaking wiggly as hell.
Barely. Wiggly. Barely shifting in my chair. And
stop being so wiggly.
Okay, I'll stop being human.
Okay, thank you. About time. So we have a sponsor.
This show is sponsored by our good friends at Ahrefs, and that is Ahrefs.com. And what you can do right now, because this is the SEO tool that we use, and it was cool that they approached us to be a sponsor.
Yeah.
And we said, sure, why not? Because you have a cool tool. And you give away a lot of cool stuff for free, or at least very inexpensively. So for $1 a day for 7 days, it's a $7 7-day trial. Mm-hmm. You can try Ahrefs like completely.
Yeah, get in there, run a site audit. It'll tell you everything you need to fix on your SEO. You could do that within your 7-day trial, and then you'll probably stick around longer than 7 days because you're going to find all these sorts of cool things you could do with SEO after you run your audit.
Yeah, I mean, just like go back to any kind of SEO podcast that we've had on here, or even check out their YouTube channel. They give you a whole bunch of tips. I guarantee you, if you just implement one thing, or like we're even saying, if you sell that site audit, like you'll be able to make more than $7, or well, guaranteed there, but your monthly payment if you choose to continue with Ahrefs. So Ahrefs.com. Go get that trial. Check out all their cool content. It's really good.
You're gonna love it. Let's go talk to Justin Goff.
Bam. Hey, Justin, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm on your email list, and I think we have like a whole bunch of mutual friends that I think I've noticed through your email list. I know you've mentioned Dave Sinek, and AJ Roberts is actually basically my neighbor. He lives like maybe four blocks from me.
He's a mastermind buddy of ours.
Yeah, good guy. A lot of cool mutual connections. So glad to finally have you on and chat with you about what you're up to.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me.
For sure, man. Yeah, and talk about the email thing, actually, because Matt, like, when you told me about, you know, Justin's email, you're just like, oh, you have to pretty much apply to be on the list, which I'm
that was genius. So yeah, the way I first discovered you was I'm in some Facebook group. I don't remember what Facebook group it is at this point, but somebody posted like, hey, you have to get on Justin Goff's list. He's got this application. You got to go through the application to be able to get on the list. And so I went and filled out the application, and it had questions like, do you promise to like open the emails and read read them every day and all sorts of cool stuff. And I just thought that was so awesome. And then I started reading the comments below that post, and it had like a whole bunch of buddies. Like, I think Kurt Molly responded on it, and like Kevin Nations was on it, and like AJ Roberts was on it. I'm like, holy shit, if these dudes are on the list, I got to be on this freaking list.
Yeah, it's pretty funny because the reason, so I used to own a supplement company. I ran that for about 4 years. I sold it in 2017 after building that to about a $23 million business. And then I took a year off. And then right when I kind of got the itch to get going again, I'd always wanted to just like talk about marketing every single day. And I was going to start a blog, or I was going to start posting stuff on Facebook. And then I was like, I'd rather just do an email. So I literally reached out to about 100, 150 guys that I know, people I've worked with, people that knew me very well. And I was just like, hey, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write this daily email. It's going to be for a small group of people. If you want to be on the list, let me know. Mm-hmm. And they all responded back. They were like, yeah. So it started as this pretty organic thing where I just wanted to write. And I wrote every day. And then after a while, I started getting emails from people who weren't on the list, who were like, hey, Craig Clemens forwarded this to me. How do I get on your list? And I was like, well, really? There was no way to get on it. I was like, well, you kind of got to be invited by me, and I actually don't have anything set up, but I can just add you. And then I started thinking, I was like, well, how about I just extend that a little bit where you can either be invited by me or you can apply to be on the list. So that's kind of how that got set up. And yeah, I mean, my email list compared to most people is extremely small, but I purposely keep it that way. It's only about 920 people, mm-hmm. but it's 920 very high quality targeted people.
I love it.
It's the type of people I want to talk to. It's high level people doing serious volume. It's really good copywriters. It's really good media buyers. So that's kind of the whole idea behind it.
I love that
like mental space too. After selling a company, I would just imagine your mental space at that point. Like you said, you just want to write, you just want to talk about marketing and put it out there to the world, talk to the right people. Did it change your thinking when you're creating content? Like, this doesn't need to drive to a sale, or, you know, it's just like, no, I want to put the thoughts out there.
Yeah. And you actually hit on a great point there. So when I sold my business, I was ready to jump back in literally the next day building the next business. And I ended up talking to a couple guys who had sold their businesses before. It was about four different people. And the common thread among all four of them was, I'm either super grateful for the time I took off, or I wish I would have took more time off. Mm. I was like, wow. That really stood out to me. I was like, okay, these guys are all smarter than I am. Stop like trying to figure this out on your own. Just listen to them. So against my own will, I literally stopped doing anything, and it was super fucking hard.
Yeah. I bet.
It took me a good 6 weeks to actually, I just kept waking up every morning. I'd sit in front of the computer for 3 hours, and I'm like, oh, I know I'm supposed to be here.
Oh man.
It took me a good 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, to not feel guilty about not working.
Yeah.
And me kind of realizing the addiction I had to work was so much stronger than I ever would have thought. And I finally got to a point where I got comfortable with it, where I woke up a couple hours later. I took a long time to make breakfast. Me and my dog went to the dog park for an hour and a half. Mm. And I just did things that I never really had time to enjoy before. Which was amazing. Like it was a good year for me to take that time off. And one of the biggest things I kind of learned from that was, like I said, the addiction to work was so oblivious to me until I didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
I think that's something a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with big time.
Oh, 100%. I could totally relate. I sold a mm-hmm. business back in 2015 and definitely didn't have to work for a while, but unlike you, I think the very next day after I sold the business, I was already working on what was next. I never took a break, and we've actually sold a couple businesses since then, and I've never taken a break afterwards. So
it's just so ingrained in us, you know, as entrepreneurs, it's like the squirrely brain. We want to like fix things or put things out there, solve problems. And yeah, it's good for you, man, for taking that time off. And was it mainly just like thinking and just kind of introspective work and just spending some time away?
So interestingly that you asked that. So I had a real kind of rock bottom experience after I sold my business, in the sense that I had been chasing this for so long And one of my biggest goals was to make a bunch of money. And I got this huge payday on my exit. And I'm sitting there looking at my bank account the day after I get this big wire transfer. And I realized I was just as miserable as I was the day before.
Wow.
And that was a kind of harsh reality, because I was like, this is this thing I've been chasing for 14, 15 years. I finally got it. And this idea the whole time, kind of unconsciously, that I was going after, that this was going to like fill the hole in my soul, and this was that was going to make me feel like I was good enough, or this is what going to give me the recognition and approval that I kind of had always been looking for, and it didn't. It was a pretty tough thing to go through. So a lot of what I did that year actually was going through lots of personal development, lots of therapy, did a bunch of ayahuasca, LSD, all kinds of stuff like that, trying to figure out why I wasn't happy. And that was really a huge year for me in terms of getting to the root of why I was chasing this money and what I was trying to fulfill with it and what I was trying to kind of patch up and cover up with it.
Were you able to figure out, and we don't have to talk about details obviously, but like, were you able to actually get to, because we've done plant medicines, all that stuff too. And it's great, man, because you unlock some layers that you had no fucking clue were there. Did you finally find that through that process, and I don't know, maybe things like meditation and stuff like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest one for me was the therapist I worked with. He kind of calls himself more of a coach than a therapist. But after digging in with him for, I still work with him now, so it's been about a year and a half that we started, that we've been working together. That is kind of where it dawned on me that he kind of helped me see that literally everything in my life that I was doing was for approval. It all came from this position of, I grew up in a family where I basically had the mom who was an absolute like perfectionist, and nothing I ever did was good enough. So as that little kid, I was just chasing her approval over and over and over again. No matter what I did, I never got it. And if you're not really an introspective type person, or if you've never done like therapy, that might sound kind of crazy. But when you realize that kind of feeling sticks with, I'm 35 years old now, and that feeling is still with me that I was chasing for so long. And it basically just became this game of different things. Like, I tried to fulfill it with business and money. That didn't work. I tried to fulfill it with women. That didn't work. I tried to fulfill it with kind of like mentoring and helping others. And while that was like helpful, I didn't even realize I was doing it for that reason. I was doing it because I had guys underneath me who were like looking up to me and giving me all this approval and recognition. Like, so unbeknownst to me, that's really the deeper reason I was doing it. So yeah, a lot of shit like that kind of came up, and it was very eye-opening to me how this kind of single thing really kind of controlled my whole life to an extent.
I could relate to a lot of the whole comparison thing or seeking approval, or it was weird as a kid. I was just like, you know, because my mom's always had a really good job. She's not an entrepreneur. So I fought that battle. You know, it's like, oh no, go to college, do the corporate thing. I'm like, no. But I always had in my brain, I'm like, I'm going to make more money than you. And like, I'm like, I don't know why I did that as a kid. Like, I was young and I don't know. And she was like, go for it. But at the same time, it was like a corporate thing. But it was a very comparison thing. And I think it always stuck with me. So as I've noticed recently, and Matt and I mean, we talk about this stuff all the time. So this is great. And this is the stuff that, like, we actually had Mike Dillard on the show semi-recently. It just went live.
Well, the day we're recording this is also the day the Dillard episode went live.
And this was a huge topic because he had to take some time off. And he did a lot of plant medicines. He talked about on the show. And talked about the stress of just an entrepreneur and how you feel so alone a lot of times, and all these things percolate up and you don't know what's happening until like shit hits the fan and your head basically explodes or something happens, you know? So it's common.
Yeah. I mean, I you see it in all pretty successful entrepreneurs, at least most of the ones I know. They hit a spot in their 30s or 40s where they just absolutely run out of gas. And it's usually because you're almost the guy, my coach therapist, his name's Brent. He calls it white knuckling it. You're basically trying to overcome all of these, emotional blocks that you have from childhood and from growing up, and you're just kind of white knuckling it and just bursting through the wall on them. And so you have to keep doing that over and over and over and over again. And at some point you just burn out. And that's why you see a lot of entrepreneurs where it's like, everything is just more. There's no satisfaction anywhere. One of the biggest things I've kind of realized in the last year is like, I have a really good life as it is now, and I'm pretty damn happy with how my life is. Like, if I tried to really, really push myself to the point where I made an extra $1 million this year, it's really not going to change my life one bit. Mm-hmm. And that's something I would have never been able to accept before. Because I would have been like in this mind frame that like, no, I got to get all the money like while it's there.
Yeah.
And now I'm just a little more comfortable with, okay, if I make this much amount of money each year and I'm doing this, that makes me happy and I'm living kind of the lifestyle that I want. Like I can't really complain about that. I love doing that. I don't have the need anymore to work 70 hours a week just to make an extra 500 grand a year or just to do something else.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually talked to, it's interesting because all these conversations are linking into what he had James Altucher on the show, and he walked us through an exercise, pretty much what you're saying. He's like, no, think of like living yourself, your life as a billionaire. Think of all the things that you would do if you had $1 billion. Then you start doing the math. And, you know, it depends on where you live. But he's like, you don't need to make that much money to actually live that amazing life that you think you are shooting for with the money side of things. And, yeah, it's powerful, man.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. There's very few things. Like, I'm not a huge fan of flying, so if I was a billionaire, I'd fly private. But that's about, like, one of the few things that I would probably change. Like, I think about it every day. I'm like, there's not a whole lot I would change.
Mm. That's great. I love to have other people hear that. And I don't know if how have you been able to actually like work with folks who might be chasing that still? I don't know, maybe some of your clients or friends. Are there ways that you've seen resonate the most? Because stories, I'm sure we've heard these kind of stories, but it's almost like you got to be in the trenches sometime to feel the pain and be like, shit, I am chasing the money or whatever this might be. Have you seen some like ways that people can get past it without having to go down that rabbit hole?
Yeah, I mean, the first step is just being aware of it, because most people, especially me, like for so many years, I was just completely, like I said, I was completely naive to it. I was just kind of doing my thing and pushing and grinding and grinding because that's what I thought entrepreneurs are supposed to do. And then, like I said, I hit that point where I was realized I wasn't happy and realized I'd went down this rabbit hole for so many years, and I reached the end goal, but it didn't fulfill me whatsoever. And I had to dig into that. But I mean, a lot of people just literally don't, and me too, up until that point, I had never really dug in and tried to figure out why I was doing what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awareness, man. It's huge.
Yeah. So between like the sort of psychedelic experiences and like the therapy, you think therapy has been the most overall beneficial?
Yeah, it was for me. Mostly, I was one of those guys who, and this tends to happen with a lot of men, is I was so cut off from my emotions to the point that Brent, the guy I work with, literally said, I don't know how the hell you became such a good copywriter because you have no idea what an emotion even is.
Empathy? Nah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, you literally like had no sense of what emotions were. So you just pictured what they were onto other people. Mm. And he's like, somehow you're good enough at doing that to be successful. He's like, which is frankly just shocking. But yeah, I mean, for me, like I said, a lot of it, if you grew up in like a healthy household, emotionally healthy household, that's one of the things that was eye-opening to me. Cause like I was so naive to that. Like I grew up what I thought was a pretty normal blue collar middle class upbringing. I grew up in a small town in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And I just assumed my life from the outside looked kind of normal. And then when we kind of dug into everything, I realized on like the emotional level how fucked up it actually was. Mm-hmm. And kind of now just being older and going through that and learning more about it, I've realized I just kind of be a little more realistic about it instead of like having that view of like, oh, here's your parents and kind of like here's you and you're looking up and idolizing your parents like you do when you're a kid. Getting out of that mind frame for me and kind of being more realistic about how my parents raised me and how they were as parents instead of just seeing them as, like I said, putting them up on this pedestal has been hugely transformational for me.
Mm. I like that, because at the end of the day, you start doing that introspective work and you're like, man, we're all just trying to figure out our shit. Like, no one has it figured out. But we're just, it's a work in progress. You know, so the parents are no better than us, really, if you think about it.
Well, it's so interesting because some of the most successful people we know have, they've seeked out that sort of thing through either therapy or like psychedelics use or things like that. I've never done therapy, but I've done a handful of psychedelics in the past. And I've pretty much come through the same conclusions that I think you got to through therapy. So I think, you know, kind of what I'm getting at here is one of the things that I think probably holds a lot of entrepreneurs back is this stuff that they don't know that they don't know.
And probably one of the most eye-opening things that I've kind of realized after digging into this for a year and a half was realizing that these little things, or these things that you think were little things that happen in your childhood, affect every single thing in your business. Like literally the way your family operated when you were younger affects how you will set up your business in ways that you're so oblivious to, and like who you will work with. So I'll give you one example. I had a history of being a really hard person to work with because I was an absolute drill sergeant on like my assistants and people who are working with me. And I would just like blow up on them in rage and all that. Mm-hmm. Well, after about 6 months of therapy, I realized I was literally, all I was doing was replaying what my mom did to me. Mm-hmm. It was literally the exact same thing. The way she was super hard on me, and the way she was like an absolute perfectionist, and the way she would blow up and rage on me, I literally did the exact same thing to my assistants, to people who I was working with. And I had no idea I was doing that. And I had no way of like controlling it. I had no idea like what to do. I'll give you another example. I have two guys that I mentor for copywriting. Mm-hmm. And when I first started mentoring them, when I would go over kind of their emails that they were writing, I would give them feedback on them. And the feedback all the time, I would basically just point out the stuff that they needed to change and the stuff that was wrong with it. It never dawned on me once that I was not pointing out the stuff they were doing good.
That's crazy.
To me, in my head, I was like, well, obviously they know that part that they wrote. If I didn't say anything, that was good. And then one of them said something one time when I actually pointed out, I was like, oh, you did a really good job on these two paragraphs. And he was like, it completely changed the way he looked at it. And he like said something to me. He's like, oh my God. He's like, you actually said something nice about my, oh my God.
Well, it's like the love languages. That's like words of affirmation. Like that's probably what just resonated with that guy.
Well, not even that, but it's just to the point where if you're constantly just criticizing someone over and over and over again and saying, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong, and never pointing out when they're doing anything right.
Yeah.
Like they feel like they're doing everything fucking wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge lesson for me too. And like I said, going back to the shit that happens in your childhood and you just repeating it, that's exactly how my mom is with me. Mm-hmm. It was literally just replaying these things that happened when I was younger. And now they're just playing out in business over and over again, and they're hurting me business wise.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I can relate to that with my dad, you know, and how that goes to more relationships. I feel like where it comes out more and people I trust is, yeah, a little bit more of the perfectionist or calling out the faults. And yeah, before I was aware of that, I was like, oh man, I could see how I could look like an asshole to certain people, but great to others. Like, why is there this change that's happening? And again, yeah, it's all passed down from parents and programming. It's crazy, man. But how that affects business, like you were saying, I love the whole feedback, giving feedback. I want to go back to the whole empathy and copywriting. Has that changed your copywriting approach now that you've done all the therapy and all this kind of inner work?
Yeah, completely different. And it's something I actually work with copywriters on now because it was such a breakthrough for me. Is the more in touch you are with your own emotions, the better you're going to be able to write emotional copy.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something I remember Chris Haddad, who is a really, really good copywriter, a couple of years ago looked at a couple of pieces I wrote that were doing well. And he was like, just like emotionally, he's like, these are super, super flat. He's like, there's like no emotion in them. And Chris is like really known for writing super highly emotional copy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he mentioned it, and he's like, he actually made a comment, and he's like, maybe there is something going on with you that you're not connected to those parts of your emotions. And I remember at the time just kind of dismissing it and not thinking anything of it. But he was actually 100% right, because the more you're in touch with your own emotions, the more in touch you are that you know what anger feels like, that you know what fear feels like, that you know what shame feels like, you can dive into that with the copy. And the reality is that more than anything, more than headlines, more than anything, how you structure your copy is what makes really good copy great.
Yeah. You know, one email that that you sent that I really liked, and it resonated a lot with me, and I wanted to bring it, I made a note that I actually want to bring it up on the show, was you had an email about who influences your email marketing. And you said, you know, I do read Ben Settle and I do read Andre Chaperon, but really most of my biggest influence is Howard Stern. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because Joe and I are both huge fans of Howard Stern. We actually think he's probably the best interviewer out right now. But can you kind of speak into that a little bit? Because I think it's very tied into what we're talking about here.
Yeah. So when I was in high school, I had a buddy who was like this huge Howard Stern fan. And every day he'd come in and like tell me all about him and tell me about the show. And I had never listened to him, didn't care. And then I remember this is about, I didn't get into him until later, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I was flipping through Sirius on my car. I think I was on a long drive and I randomly listened to a show of his, and I wound up listening to the whole show. Mm-hmm. And probably about 2 days later, I listened to another one and I was just hooked. Mm-hmm. And that quickly, and not to the point where I don't drive anywhere now where I'm not listening to Howard Stern. It's like the only damn thing I listen to. And What he does, it'd be very easy to dismiss what he does as this kind of vulgar guy talking about sex and boobs and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Because what he really does is he lets you inside of his world, and he opens up and he's vulnerable, and you get to know him on a level that you really don't get to know a lot of people, and that's really what sucks you in. Mm-hmm. And then he's amazing at meshing that with the entertainment of the drama that's going on in their office.
Yeah, that's true.
To the point that he actually mentioned it one time on a show. And I had always known this, because I just kind of from the info product business, this is like what it's all about. But he mentioned it. One of the guys on Howard Stern, JD, who like works in the back, basically got engaged, and he announced it on Twitter before like announcing it on the show. And Howard like just ripped him for like an hour. He was like, why the hell would you announce it on Twitter? Like, we could have had a huge segment on the show. And like, there was a point in the conversation where Howard was like, he's like, I don't know if you understand this, but he's like, this entire show is basically like a reality show. He's like, what the fans really want is they want to see inside of our office and see the drama and see what's going on behind the scenes. He's like, that's what they fucking want.
Yep.
When he said that, I was like, he is absolutely right. It's the reason we watch reality TV shows. It's the reason why when we write emails about personal stuff going on in our life, you get 20 times the response than when you write a great email that's about like some amazing new, I don't know, conversion boost. Like, people really just kind of want to see inside your life and kind of be a voyeur.
Mm-hmm. Dude, we do the same thing with our podcast, because we got the, you know, we were doing interviews primarily, and folks were like, dude, like, why not just the two of you guys? Like, let us know what you guys are thinking. Show us, you know, into your office, essentially, in our brains. And now we have these therapy sessions, and we just let freaking everything out. Like, yeah. We talk about all the bullshit, all the stresses, the good as well, but that is like the inside look. And like you said, that's where we get the responses in our support desk. Facebook's blowing up. People are sharing it. They're like, yeah, this is what it's all about, man.
Yeah, we literally do a once a month episode called Therapy Sessions. And it's just Joe and I just like literally talking about like the emotional shit that's going on in our lives, the stuff that's going on in the business, some of the best conversations we've had with past guests. But it's just like we just kind of take them behind the scenes and open up the brains a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, I love that. And I feel like with this episode, and the reason I brought that up is we've kind of, you know, we just dove straight to the deep end on just like, let's just put it all out there.
Love it. Yeah, we're joking. Yeah, we're like, yeah, people that do this work, I feel like should get a, and I noticed you had a tattoo on your arm. You have a tattoo of a feather, but it's like, people need to get like a patch or like a tattoo. You're like, yeah, they get it. Yeah. Like, you can talk deep, like, and there's not going to be any bullshit or filters or whatever. It's just cool. It's real talk.
The interesting thing is like a lot of people, especially in like the guru space, are afraid to do that. They try to put on the persona of being perfect. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that's actually the worst way to get people to follow you, because nobody can relate with that. like the stuff I share on my email list when I talk about, I wrote an email a couple months ago about, I was really struggling with my writing at the time. Like I couldn't come up with ideas. Like everything was like falling flat. I felt like it was just like shitty copy that I was putting out. And the response I got from all the copywriters on my list were just like, A, they were shocked. They're like, I can't believe someone who's at your success level feels like this. And the second part was, this makes me feel 100 times better about myself because I'm going through the same shit.
Yep.
And I mean, that the reality is that's what like people bond to. Like people bond to your flaws and your rough edges. They don't bond to the perfect person.
Oh, that's so interesting. It's so true, because I made a post on Facebook, this has been 6 months ago, about how I was suffering from severe anxiety. Like, I did not like leaving my house and going into social situations, and one time we even went to a networking event, and it got so bad that I actually fainted in the middle of the thing, because my anxiety just built up so much. And I actually wrote this big, long post about it on Facebook, and I didn't really get much public like comments of people going, oh, I'm going through the same thing or things like that. But I got probably 25 PMs on Facebook from people going, I'm going through the same thing. And I'm like, well, why are you saying it here and not over on this post? Nobody wanted to share it. But I just saw how instantly, just by posting that thing, how many people sort of bonded and reached out to me, even though they weren't willing to publicly state that they were having those issues too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the shit that we're all going through that nobody talks about. And then when you talk about it, people instantly bond onto it. Just exactly like you said with your story.
Yeah. And that's, we're at a war room, I don't know, a few months ago, and Perry Belcher was on stage and basically was saying, like, dude, everybody needs to put their flaws out on social media, emails, wherever. And it's the relatability. And it's just kind of crazy to think that we have to tell ourselves to do that, or you're like, this is how you relate to people. Like, we all fall behind this computer, this monitor, whatever, and think like this is the world. It's like, no, the internet's a tool. Like, this is your people. You're talking to people. It's just a communication medium.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, yeah, interesting. So, what like now? You said you sold the company, went through all that. What are you doing? Like, what's the day to day look like for you now?
So right now, I have a couple coaching programs. My main one is a program called Copy Accelerator that I run with Stefan Georgi. Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar with Stefan, he's probably, I would say in my eyes, the number one copywriter in the world right now. I think Him and Craig Clemens are probably neck and neck. Mm-hmm. But anyways, Stefan and I run that program where we teach people copy, we teach them funnels, we break down offers that are working, and then we give people like feedback on their offers. So that takes up most of my time. I'm launching a few new products later in the year, but yeah, the Copy Accelerator is kind of my main thing right now.
Nice. So it just seems like, yeah, you're filtering out, you're working with the right people. You can give this feedback that you've kind of learned and honed, sharpen the tools throughout the years, it seems like. Yeah.
We really, it's interesting. We started out and we targeted two different kinds of people. We targeted business owners that we knew already, that who have copywriters on their team or freelance writers. And a lot of them have paid to put their own writers into the program. And then Stefan and I train them for them, which has been great for them. Mm-hmm. And then the other half is more like freelance copywriters or the business owner who kind of still writes his own copy. So that's kind of who's in the group. But yeah, it's been pretty interesting because we work with really high level businesses. So like there's Agora Financial and Dan Locke's team and mm-hmm. Paleo Hacks, and like it's all serious direct response businesses. but I mean, we get a really good view because everybody shares stuff. And we have, like I said, I don't know, 60, 70 some people in there right now. And you get to see like what's working for the best of the best in health and finance and dating and biz op. And
nice.
It's pretty, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. On the bio, you mentioned that you're best known for converting offers on cold traffic. So I'm curious what, this is probably a very loaded question and probably a deep topic, but what sort of different things do you have to consider when you're working with cold traffic versus warmer traffic? Maybe like your mailing list traffic is, let consider that like warm traffic, where cold traffic would be like off of Google search ads or like maybe an interest target on Facebook as opposed to retargeting.
Yeah, so I mean, warm traffic, you can get away with being a C+ or B- marketer and making it convert. So if you're mailing an offer to your house list, like, you can get away with pretty basic stuff and still get 3-4% conversion rate. Cold traffic, you have to be completely on your game in more ways than that. You have to have, there's kind of like a four-legged stool that I look at when it comes to that. So there's the actual offer and how appealing the offer is. There's the copy, or I mean, then there's the ads. So a lot of people actually don't realize this, even super smart people, where everything else would be dialed in, then it stops working and they actually think they need to redo the whole sales page. In reality, it's like just the ads have kind of burned out and you just need to redo those. So that's the second one. The third one is the actual copy on the sales page. And the fourth one would be the upsells. And the majority of the really smart businesses that I work with, the upsells is where they're leaving the most money on the table. And in today's kind of cutthroat world, in terms of cold traffic, your upsells have to be so dialed in to make an offer work on cold traffic. Whereas like even 2 years ago, you could get away with pretty mediocre and decent stuff. Now it's pretty much all your upsells, all your downsells, any type of backend offer you have on the confirmation, like all that stuff has to be pretty dialed in to get something ramped up on cold traffic.
Nice. Yeah, that's... Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people aren't thinking of the whole cold traffic element. I don't think we've really had people on here talking about specifically cold traffic and how.
I would consider ourselves probably like that C+ B minor marketers because we're really good at converting our warm traffic, but not great at converting cold traffic.
Total honesty. That's how it is, and I think that's most listening too.
Yeah, so I mean, sort of our philosophy, the way we do it is we drive cold traffic just straight to content, knowing that we're not the greatest at converting cold traffic, so we just drive them to content, and then ideally they're either opting in, and if they're not opting in, they're getting on our retargeting list, so they're slightly more warmed up, and then we're putting offers in front of people to sort of compensate for the fact that we know we aren't very good at converting cold traffic.
It's all content forward. That's what the podcast serves as well, you know, a big content play.
So I think that's the way a lot of things are going too. I mean, if you look at I'm good friends with Dan Locke, and I look at what like Dan does. If someone's watching Dan's stuff on Facebook and YouTube or listening to his podcast for 5 months, like just like you said, making that sale is 100 times easier than if they just click on your cold Facebook ad. And I think guys like him and Frank Kern, a lot of people are really, really pushing this a lot harder. And it's definitely the way things are going. And I see a lot more people kind of diving into it now. So I definitely think you guys are on the right path with that.
That's good. Yeah. So I want to go back to, cause you said you look at a lot of copy, you have like 70 plus people or so in there. What are some, like, I know you're all about the deep emotional kind, and now even more so that, like, what's working really well that folks here can kind of swipe and just start testing out?
Yeah. I would say the biggest thing right now that everybody wants is to get compliant offers up on Facebook. By far is the biggest need. And it's really hard because in order to get something running on Facebook, it's got to be pretty watered down to make it compliant. And then obviously the conversions drop. So what we're kind of seeing a lot of people doing really, really well is taking an offer that works, usually testing it in email. So you'd write the hard-hitting copy that you normally do, test it in email. And once you know that it's a viable offer, that it works, then transferring it over and trying to test it on Facebook with a much more kind of watered down approach where you're pulling out some of the claims, you're making it more user friendly. So like one of the big things Facebook doesn't allow is they don't allow you to make people feel like shit. Like you normally would in copy where you dig into all their pain points and kind of make them feel bad about whatever's going on. Facebook, that's a big no-no. So you got to do things much in a much more happy and positive way, which is a very different way of writing copy for people who learned how to write copy 10, 20 years ago. Because it's literally the complete opposite. I tend to call it the watered down direct response that I see working really, really well right now. And it's, as a copywriter, it's kind of hard emotionally because you look at it and you're like, God damn, I could write something so much better than this. But at the end of the day, what really matters is that you're bringing in customers. And if you can get it to work to the point where you're bringing in 100, 200,000 customers a day, like what's it really matter if it's 70% as good as what you'd normally write?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that Facebook and, you know, Google, maybe more Facebook, is it's changing the game of copywriting. It's like completely shifting how you approach that thinking.
I actually mentioned this the other day. Copy has probably changed more in 2019 than it has in the previous 10 years.
Whoa.
Simply because of compliance. Because copy in 2019 is compliance trumps conversion in 2019. That's probably the biggest change.
Is it mainly Facebook, or are you seeing like Google and all these other networks too?
It's everywhere. I mean, if you want to run on any of the tier one stuff, so Google, Facebook, native, the compliance has gotten really, really tough. There's obviously ways around it with like article landers and stuff like that. But if you want to run for the long term, you have to figure out a way to kind of water down your copy in a way that Facebook's going to be okay with it and Google's going to be okay with it, and not try to hide the fact and just do like hard hitting copy. Cause that's, people do that and it works for a while, but it's definitely moving in the direction of everything has to have this like fun, good, positive vibe to it. And you can't make people feel bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not just the ad, that's the landing page too. I think a lot of people think like, oh, I can only, you know, I have to follow their terms on the ad, but Facebook actually does look at the landing pages. I know for a fact, because we've had Facebook ads account shuts down. So
if you're doing the right thing in business and pushing the limits, that probably happened to most.
So I want to touch on Patriot Power Greens real quick, because we actually have a couple friends who are affiliates of Patriot Power Greens. So I find it's super interesting that you're involved in that, and you helped take it in 3 years to 280,000 new buyers. What sort of things? What was your involvement in it, and how did you help grow that?
Yeah, so I started the supplement company with another guy named Brandon. So we started it was called Patriot Health Alliance. We started it basically because both of us were doing all these email buys on conservative email lists, and we were doing really well with it. We were promoting a bunch of affiliate offers and stuff. And I messaged him one day. I was like, why don't we just start our own supplement company and promote our own offers? And he's like, all right. So we did that. We started with a testosterone offer that did pretty well. We grew that to about $1 million in sales in the first year. And then, Brandon ended up being bought out by my other partner, who is my future partner, Alan Baylor. Mm-hmm. And so Alan and I took that company from $1 million in sales to $23 million in about 2.5 to 3 years. And Patriot Power Greens, which was our greens powder, was the main product that kind of built that.
Gotcha.
And it's one of the reasons why I'm so big on getting an offer to work on cold traffic, because I saw it firsthand when we were bringing in 700 new buyers a day who are spending $200 on their first purchase, how much that grew the company on the back end, because we were pretty good at back end already. And like I said, you don't have to be a genius to be good at back end stuff.
Yeah.
But when you're bringing in that many buyers, it completely changes the game, because all those people just buy all your stuff on the back end, and then you're just making money hand over fist. And we basically saw that. So Patriot Power Greens, interestingly, when it started out, a lot of copywriters look at products and they're like, they'll do all the research and they'll be like, okay, where's the hook in this, blah, 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 which is a good way to do it. Another way you can do it, which is what I did, was if you know the market well enough, you create the hook before you even create the product. So what I did with Patriot Power Greens was I know what works in the conservative niche. And I was like, there's one angle I know that I have not seen anybody do, and that's tying something to the military. Mm-hmm. People who are politically conservative have a huge affinity for the military. And so I was like, there's gotta be a way we can tie this in. So I had a cousin who was in the Coast Guard at the time, and we made our supplement, packaged up a huge box of it. I shipped it out to him, and I was like, hey, you and your buddies in your unit, in the Coast Guard, give us a try. Let me know what you guys think of it. And so they tried it for a couple of weeks, and they sent us back a bunch of user feedback. And one of the ones that really stood out to me, they had this guy in the group who was one of the older guys. I mean, most people in the military are like 19, 20 years old. Mm-hmm. This guy was like older for the military. And he talked about how all of his PT times were improving. He had more energy, and he was like, I'm keeping up with the young guys for the first time and actually beating them in some of this stuff. Nice. And I was like, oh, shit, that's a great one. Wow. As soon as I read that, I was like, okay, here's like – and then I literally turned that into Patriot Power Greens was now like this elite – or this exclusive – greens drink that was formerly used by elite military units, and it was helping the old guys keep up with the young guys in their unit. And that turned out to be an absolute home run, because to a guy who's 55, 60 years old, more than anything, he wants to be young again. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what he wants. So yeah, that was kind of the first hook we tested. It was an absolute like grand slam right out of the gate. We were spending like $3,000 on an email buy and bring him back like $15,000 on day one. It was just, yeah.
Wow.
I had never seen it. I literally thought stuff was broken because I was like, I have never seen anything like this. So yeah, that's kind of how that started off. And like I said, over basically about a 3-year span, we scaled that to, it brought in somewhere around 280,000 to about 300,000 brand new buyers. So it was a huge hit.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I know it had a bunch of affiliates too, because we had a couple buddies who were telling us, oh, dude, you guys got to get on board for this Patriot Power Greens thing. This thing is just crushing it for the affiliates.
Well, you had the hook right. I mean, it started with the hook, and did that change over time, over the span of those 3 years or so?
Not really. Nice. The thing we realized was that the stories we were getting from the people using it turned out to be kind of the best stuff for our marketing. Mm-hmm. So like one of our great ones was we had this woman who her husband was a World War II vet. He was like 93 years old or something. Mm-hmm. He was in a veteran's home in California, and she was on one of these email lists and bought it for him. And he was basically bedridden for like 6 months. And she was like, basically like, what can it hurt? I might as well try this and see if it helps him. And she started giving it to her husband. And she said she came back into the veteran's home, like, I think it was like a couple days later. And he was like out of his room and walking down to the dining hall. And she was like, he hadn't left his bed for like 6 months. Wow. And now he was like walking down the dining hall that was like apparently half a mile away. And wow. She sent us this email, and I was like, oh, wow, this is an amazing story. So I got in touch with her, and I had like a 2-hour phone call, and she was like the sweetest lady ever and couldn't believe how much this was helping her husband. And she was so like grateful. And I was like, okay. And I was like, we'll send you a bunch more of it for free. I was like, I just want to, can we use your story? I was like, it would be a great story to use in our marketing stuff. And she was like, yeah, that'd be great. So she lets us use this. She sent us a bunch of pictures of her husband, like even sent us pictures of him back when he was in the military and all this stuff. Hmm. And I wrote up this huge, great story about how this former World War II vet who was basically bedridden was now up and walking around. And if this could do that much for him, just kind of think about what it could do for you. And stories like that, we got those kind of stories over and over, and those just crushed and propelled the marketing on and on.
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. I mean, it's talking to your customers, man, listening to them and getting real stories. I mean, it seems like that's where the best copy, obviously the hooks, can come from. You see the emotion in those stories. So it's like, even if you're maybe not super empathetic quite yet as a copywriter, if you're listening or so, you know, you can actually like kind of piggyback off those stories and be like, ah, okay.
Yeah.
Use the wife's
speaking on emotion. What are some of the, like the sort of emotional triggers that have been the most effective to hit on in the copy to really get kind of people into that buying mode?
So, I mean, it definitely depends on the niche. So like if you're in financial, they do kind of a combination of fear and greed stuff. So they'll do fear. That'll be the very doomsday and mm-hmm. everything is going to end. And then they'll do other ones that are huge, like greed plays where it's like, you can invest $50 in this marijuana stock and potentially make $3 million in retirement. Mm-hmm. So like for that niche, that really works. I do a lot of work in the survival niche. Mm-hmm. And with survival, it's really anger more than anything.
Yeah.
The people who, if you're not familiar with the survival niche, it's mostly very right-wing conservative and sometimes libertarian men, mostly men over the age of 60. who are very, very angry at kind of the way things are going in the world. They're very angry at specific groups of people. They're just angry people. And anger really, though, is coupled with fear. So the reason they're angry is kind of like their life hasn't turned out how it is. They like to blame other people for everything. They like to blame the government.
Yeah.
But then a part of that is also fear that, fear of where things are going, fear of them not being able to be able to survive on their own, fear of all that kind of stuff. So like that market is very, like I said, it's a fear, and you start with the anger and then you transition to fear with a lot of stuff. So a lot of it, like I said, it goes back to really knowing who the customer is. And like, if you're marketing to men, usually it might be a little different than if you're marketing to women, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you look at like women's weight loss or women's beauty, which would be like, face creams and moisturizers and stuff like that. Like that one's pretty much all built on shame.
Oh yeah.
It's basically, I'm not thin enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not whatever. So, I mean, the biggest thing is all markets are different. There's usually one kind of main emotion that you'd want to target. But overall, you can only really find that out by doing the research and actually knowing who the customer is.
Well, it seems like you said something there is like you're almost flipping it a little bit. So it seems like every emotion, you can start with one. Maybe that's the one that's top of mind for them. So like you said, anger, they're always angry and they're pissed off. Yeah. But they're not going to admit they're fearful of just shit crumbling or China taking over, whatever the hell their fears are, you know, but it's interesting that you can like flip that emotion once you start with their trigger. I'm sure there's, you know, a flip to every happy, sad, whatever emotion. Just tie it back to the market, like, you know, after you understand them.
Yeah. And I mean, you see the Agora companies doing this really well, especially in the health niche, where if you looked at one of their VSLs and the first like 3 minutes of it is about Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, you'd be like, what the hell does this have to do with selling a testosterone supplement?
Yeah.
Yep.
But that's what's on the top of the mind for the customer. And they're smart enough, the copywriter who wrote it, they're smart enough to be able to make that transition from starting with bitching about Hillary or bitching about Obama and then turning it to eventually getting to what they want to talk about in terms of the promise or.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that your beginner copywriter would never be able to do because they would just write out features and benefits and kind of talk like that. But if you can really tap into that big, big thing that's on their mind every single day, that thing that gets them emotionally charged up, then you're playing a whole different game when you can do that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then that's your hook, essentially. You know, it's like it's the big hook, and then you draw them in. The story almost writes itself a little bit there. Obviously, yep. No instruction and all that.
Yeah. Now, what do you think? What sort of emotions would you touch on? And I don't know if you even work in this niche at all, but in the sort of like biz op marketing. I mean, we don't really operate in biz op. We operate more like business to business marketing advice and that sort of thing. What sort of emotional triggers would you hit on in that kind of space?
Yeah. So we have a bunch of guys. And like I said, in our Copy Accelerator group in this niche, and we help them. The thing I've realized with the biz op type stuff is that they care 100 times more about getting out of their current situation than they do about whatever it is you're selling them. Mm-hmm. So you really want to empathize with them about their current situation. So it's going to be a lot of frustration and anger. It's going to be a lot of shame that like they're not making as much money as maybe, I don't know, one of their buddies or their wife's like brother. Stuff like that really resonates. Like if they need to drive an hour every day in traffic and they're just pissed off that entire time, talking about that and bringing that up, or the boss that they have who basically doesn't listen to them and just tells them what to do, that type of shit is going to resonate with them 100 times more than you telling them about this bright, shiny object over here. Because once you can empathize with them on that and on their situation, then you can easily turn it and kind of show them a better way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Jot some of these down because these are freaking awesome, man. Because yeah, it's just it's the lack of freedom is really the probably that flip side of the emotion, you know. But you want to hit them head on with whatever it is, maybe commuting or not. Yeah, you know, your boss freaking screaming at deadlines all day long. You're like, God damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, you really have to start with where they're at, because if you don't do that first part, you don't empathize with them and get them emotionally charged up about their current situation, trying to sell them on the BizOp course is going to be really damn hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not enough of a getting out of their current situation appeals to them way more than than whatever this new shiny object is that you're selling them. That's really just a way out of their current situation. They care, like when you talk about weight loss, people care a lot more about not being fat than they do about being skinny.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a minor difference, but it's a huge shift in the way you would talk to them. Like they want to not be fat a lot more than they want to be skinny.
Mm. Yeah. And get them out of the what was it? Travis Sago's like, take him to get him out of hell and take him to whatever island.
Yeah. Like Heaven Island and Hell Island. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Get him off that place. That's awesome, man. No, this is good.
Cool.
You want to, I think we're, yeah, let's wrap her up, huh? And, what are some, some books you just find yourself going back to, or maybe recommending some of these consulting folks, the people you're mentoring that just left this massive impact for you?
Let me think. So a couple that my biggest one that I recommend to everybody who's in the kind of direct response space is Michael Masterson's Ready, Fire, Aim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good book.
That book literally blew my mind the first time I read it, when he talks about the different stages of the business growth and how in the first year you should always be focusing on sales and then, and focusing on gathering customers. It's really kind of the blueprint for how to build either an info product business or some type of even physical products business online. And I think he really nailed it. And he's obviously super successful, tons of experience. So that's probably the number one book I recommend. The other one would be Stephen Pressfield's Turning Pro. That had a huge impact on me. I remember the first time I read that, just seeing the way he does the contrast between being an amateur and being a pro.
Mm-hmm.
It really flipped a switch for me in terms of a lot of the stuff I was doing before, where I was very much in that amateur mindset.
Yeah. Everything Stephen Pressfield's written has been amazing. Actually, I haven't read his fiction stuff, but all of his nonfiction has been amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm the same way. I've actually never read any of his fiction.
It's got to be good.
I think I've seen the movie The Legend of Bagger Vance, which he wrote. Yeah. But
there you go. Awesome, nice. Dude.
Where would you want people to go after listening to this episode? Where's the best place to check you out? And, you know, if somebody might be interested in get on your list or something like that, where can they go?
Yeah, so we talked about my email list at the beginning. I actually have a special link that people can go and get on it, or they can go and apply to get on it. It's super simple. It's justin123.com. If you go to justin123.com, it'll send you to a really ugly Google Doc form where you kind of fill that out. And I actually check that literally every day. And then if you're accepted on the list, you'll start getting the emails within about 48 hours or so.
Cool. That's so cool.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm on the list. I can attest it's great content. There's very rarely even links in the emails. A lot of times it's just like, hey, here's some wisdom from something I experienced today. So it's really, really valuable stuff.
And I will admit I'm not on the list yet, but I hope I get approved after I apply after this. Thanks, Justin.
We'll make a deal for you.
Thanks, brother.
Awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate you being super open with us and, you know, just sharing and going wherever we wanted to take this thing. And, you were very, very open. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem, guys. I appreciate you guys having me.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
All right. See ya. See ya.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. For taking the time to listen, we want to give you something a little bit special. Every single episode that we do, we actually have somebody on our team take notes. We basically have a Cliff's Notes version of every episode where you can go and find all of the tips and tactics that they laid out, all of the resources that they laid out, all the good stuff from this episode. We actually have a nice simple notes version that you can find on our website. So go to evergreenprofits.com, find this episode that you just listened to, and give us your email address and we'll send you the notes. Thanks for listening.